Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. An Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement. How they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live. How they are filling their time. What charities they are supporting and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
I'm extremely excited and privileged to be talking with a man that I've come to admire with his budget travel advice, and his name is Shane Thomas. So welcome, Shane.
How are you, Anne? Congratulations on writing the book.
Thank you. I always start our Reinvent Yourself for Retirement talks by getting a little background on people. So could you please tell me about your background prior to retirement?
Prior to retirement, I worked in a TV station as a technician for 7 years. Then I sold real estate for 5 years, managed a mobile phone shop for 3 years. 10 years following on from that, I worked in call centres so I could travel a lot. But what I mean is like 1 year trips, and the last 7 years I've like semi-retired or retired.
Okay, so what did you do next?
Basically, I paid the mortgage off of the house, and that was my main goal, so that I had financial freedom to do what I wanted.
So when did you decide you wanted to travel full time, and why?
That would have been 1993. I won a travel prize, which was a substantial amount of money. That allowed me to travel for 7.5 months and doing the States, Europe and other places on someone else's money was quite a unique experience. So I had unlimited train travel passes. I actually had a 30-day Delta Air Pass, meaning unlimited flights in the States, backtrack, do anything you want. So the 7.5 months was a real blast. When I got home after that, all I could think about was the next trip.
Right. Can we just tell everyone where you are currently, where you are talking to me from?
Relatively close to Australia. I'm in Kuta, Bali, Indonesia.
And how long have you been there?
6 weeks. I'm here for 2 months.
2 months, okay. So how long have you been travelling, and what type of traveller do you call yourself?
I've been on the road, so to speak, for about 7 years, and I would consider myself a hard-nosed budget traveller, though I'm not continually travelling and seeing new things like a typical backpacker would. I'm actually living in different locations, usually 1, 2 or 3 months at one location.
When you started out travelling, did you have a bucket list of places you wanted to see? And how are you going with that?
I wanted to see it all, I guess, in some ways. But of course, as you start travelling, you realise the world actually starts to get bigger. Like, you do 13 countries of the 51 countries of Africa and you realise that this is a big continent. It's actually 3.5 times the size of Australia. So I've left Africa at 13-odd countries and I don't have any special plans to go back. So I did things that were sort of relatively easy, cost-effective. Just by default, I've ticked off like 43 out of 44 European countries quite some years ago. I've seen like a half the world, and I don't have a list just to tick off for the hell of it. I have got 2 new countries pegged in the next 6 months. One is Sri Lanka, and the other one's the Maldives.
So how many countries have you visited, and how long has it taken you?
I started travelling when I was 20, and about 10 years ago I achieved 109 countries. So from 20 to say 46, something like that. That's the time frame. So it's been over quite a period of time.
In a year, which countries do you visit now? Are you in a routine now, and why?
It's totally random, because what I do is wait for airfares to become available. And what I mean by an airfare is basically the seat is free and you pay the taxes. So if a particular airline comes up with an amazing price, I'll consider going there. If it's one of my places I want to go to, book it. It could be booked 1 month ahead, 12 months ahead. And that's how I go to my 5 chosen bases that I've decided to live in the last 7 years.
All right. And which countries are they? Do you spend the most time in now?
China, Cambodia, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia.
And how long do you spend in each of these countries?
1 to 3 months typically.
1 to 3 months. Is there any particular reason for the time frame?
Yes, because as Australians, we need visas in most countries. The visa may be free, but you still have like a 30-day time limit for a one-month visa. Quite often I'll extend a second and third month at cost, and so I'm always thinking in months. So the economy of my travel is based on thinking in months, whether it be 1, 2, or 3 months at a time.
So typically how much money does it cost you to be a continual traveller?
The all-in amount for a whole year on the road, the way I travel, would be something like about $6,500 a year.
That's absolutely amazing. You must have a lot of people asking you how do you do that?
Well, you have to be disciplined in some ways. It's not like a backpacker going out every night, getting himself drunk, can't remember what he did the following day or following month. That's not my lifestyle.
Okay, so what standard of accommodation can you get for that?
For about $230 a month would be my typical accommodation budget. It could be a fan room, meaning no aircon. In those five countries that I live in, one of them actually has unlimited air conditioning. So that's like incredible for that price range. That's like a miracle. Mm. It takes a lot of effort to find a deal like that, which I did about 5 years ago. And the trick is to keep going back to the same hotel, create good PR and hold on to a good price.
Okay, very wise. So do you ever treat yourself?
Yeah, a birthday comes around and I think, So what I do is in all these nice locations, I check out five-star hotels, typically online. And for example, in Thailand, you might find a genuine five-star hotel for under $100 Australian for a night. So that's a good little treat for a birthday.
So which airlines do you use? Because you said earlier that you only travel when you're only paying the taxes on your fares. So who do you use?
I use a Philippine airline called Cebu Pacific about half the time, and the other one you guys in Australia will know, and that is AirAsia. AirAsia, as we speak, has a 3 million seat giveaway. What that means is that they're effectively giving away the seat, but you pay the taxes. What that means is that you need to spend a lot of time online and try and pick out a needle in a haystack, in other words, a cheap fare that suits you in your time frame. And that time frame, for example, the fares at these crazy prices, the soonest you could fly would be in a few months' time, and the longest you could fly will be 15 months' time. That's really pushing the envelope far as the airlines are concerned. They're quite smart. They're bringing in money literally 15 months ahead on these sales.
Right, okay. So why do you stick to Asia? Is it the weather, or could you do this somewhere else like Europe or South America?
The budget is much easier in Asia, and that's one of the main reasons I started off living in Asia. But I'm seriously considering Central and South America. I have been a tourist in Central and South America, almost seen all the countries there, but I've not lived there. If I go to Central and South America, I'd have to increase my budget by about 50-60%. So it's something I'll probably do in the next year or two or three.
Right, because there's a lot of Americans that have retired down there. It seems to be really, really popular with the Americans. But they go and buy down there. So you never buy, you're just paying rent there, aren't you?
Yes, I'm always in a hotel or a guest house. The golden rule is never buy. It's foolish to buy. A lot of foreigners do buy in some of these exotic locations. They pay way over the top. They get stuck with the property. They realise it's not for them because they should have lived there and rented there for a year or two to find out if it is for them. And then they try and sell it, and they're waiting for the next sucker to come along and buy it, and that quite often takes years. So it's not smart, no matter how much you're in love with a place, to buy it quickly.
Right. Good advice. Have you had any unusual experiences on your travel that you would care to share?
People are amazing. It doesn't matter how rich or how poor they are, and you meet them all from the top to the bottom and in between. I can remember 20-odd years ago, being on a train heading into Moscow, gentleman in a suit sitting beside me, and he owned some oil tankers, so he's obviously a wealthy gentleman. Actually, it wasn't Moscow, it was Leningrad. When we pulled into the station in Leningrad, he said, "My driver is waiting for me. Would you like a lift to the hostel?" I said, "Thank you."
Had you been there before, I suppose?
No, that was a new first time to, and only time to Leningrad.
Oh, well, that was extra special to get a lift in a place where you've never been before. So with all the countries that you've visited, what would you say is the friendliest country, the safest country, and the best value country to travel in?
Really, the whole world's friendly.
Thank you.
Most of, I would say just about all of Southeast Asia is friendly. Safest, in simple terms, the rich countries are the safest, like the Singapores, the Australias, the Americas. Any country that's rich is basically safe.
And the best value country to travel in?
Well, basically it all belongs to Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
I average about $22 Australian a day, but in some countries you could probably live on a few dollars a day if you really wanted to do it rough. It is possible.
No, I don't think I could. I like my bed. So what's your three favourite countries that you like?
One that's always stuck in my mind is Norway because of the beautiful fjords. It's like the ocean going inland, even though it's a long, skinny country. The ocean actually goes in 108 miles. And those fjords are very calm because they're a long way from the moving ocean. It's almost like a lake when you look at it. And the scenery is so special. It's the area I'm talking about, it's called, tourist-wise, for the last few decades, it's called Norway in a nutshell. So you're on this train from the capital Oslo. You get off at a place called Flam, and then you take an electric train down into the valley through 50 tunnels. You get to the lake's edge, or which is really a fjord, and then what you see is these mountains around you with farms on the side of it, all green, reflecting in the glassy lake.
Mm.
It's so beautiful. So then you steam to a bus. The bus takes you further on to another railway station, jump on the train, and then you go to a beautiful city on the coast called Bergen, which is a lot of wooden houses, quite unique in a modern world. So that's a couple of places in Norway. Another one special is the Czech Republic. The capital city, Prague, is very interesting. It's a city that wasn't bombed in the war. It's actually 600 years old. So when you're in the old town square, or the palace, or the church, it's like stepping back in time, 600 years. Everything is preserved as it was. It is over-touristed, but it's still special in the world. So Prague is very special. That would probably be number one or two country in the world, far as I'm concerned, because even if you get yourself lost in the city of Prague, everything you see is interesting to you, or certainly to an Australian.
Okay, and have you got a third one?
Yeah, I can come up with many more. I think my favourite country back 25 years ago would have been Salzburg in Austria. Imagine this city looking up towards a castle higher on the hill, and that just inspired me. I just thought it was just so beautiful and inspiring that I consider that to be the number one city.
Mm, it is one place I have been to on your list. back in the 70s, I was with four friends driving around in a Comma camping van.
It's great if you can share in a vehicle.
Yes, yeah. It was a while ago, back in the 70s. Is it safe for women to travel on their own in all these countries? What should they do to be safe?
Generally, the answer is yes, but male or female, you just need to have your wits about you. A good tip is if you need information, don't ask a stranger in the street, particularly not a man if you're a woman. Go to a shop and say, "Hey, you know, how do I get to here or there?" Because they've got nothing to lose. They're locked into a shop in a business. So they're not going to trick you like a taxi driver might, or someone pretending to be a policeman, or just some criminal that you just happen to ask. With respect to women, it's important, obviously, to dress down, not to display your attributes, particularly in certain Muslim countries, for example. It's even considered more than rude to show parts you shouldn't be showing. So you have to be aware of the culture and the customs of that country. You know, to be downright disrespectful is not very smart. And a lot of Westerners are disrespectful, which is a bit sad. Yeah. I mean, they're tolerated, but it's not a nice situation. For a lady on her own, I always suggest that she carry a pitcher, and it can be a big burly brother or a real boyfriend or husband, it doesn't matter. She's holding on to this guy. He looks mean, and that tells a story to anyone she's trying to shake away from her. She could also wear a wedding ring and just explain to this not-so-nice man that she's just about to meet this guy, hold up the pitcher, and she just walks off and heads in a different direction.
All right.
So male or female, the main thing is not to stand around looking lost with a guidebook in your hand, because you just like, you stand out like a beacon with your white skin to start with, and you're just begging for someone to come up to you, which is not good. So pretend you know where you're going, and as I said before, just ask people in fixed businesses for help. That's the smartest thing to do.
All right, thank you. Well, that's very good advice. Can you recommend a website to share information and find like-minded travellers?
Yeah, there is a good website I came across many years ago. It's called TravBuddy, TravBuddy.com. And TravBuddy is, there's millions of members. It's free to join up. I'm a member there. And you can search almost any city in the world and up comes information about that city. It will be hotels that TravBuddy people have reviewed. It'll be insights, like a general overview of the city. And it'll also be two types of TravBuddies. One will be local people, and the others will be people going there at some time in the future. So in TravBuddy, you can make a list of all your future destinations. You can even put dream destinations down, which I don't bother. I just put my future ones down for the next year ahead. And because you put dates in there, when you do this search on, say, Prague, what you'll see is TravBuddy's already living in Prague, and you can contact them for advice. And you'll see fellow travellers like yourself that will be there at the time you're going to be there. So it's very easy to make contact, get information. And TravBuddies have meetups. I haven't been to one, but it's a very social, it can be a social thing if you want it to be that way. I haven't used it a lot, but I did talk to one guy. We were discussing this $20 a night pension in Tahiti, which is one of the world's richest like honeymoon locations, where down the road was a $1,500 a night hotel.
Mm.
And we were debating whether this $20 hotel would be a good thing, because some of the reviews said, oh, there's roosters crowing and there's noise and it's near the main road and it's terrible. And other reviews were saying, it's really good. So I ended up going there. I didn't meet this guy because I can go at the same time as him. And it was wonderful. I took the free canoe, paddled up about 500 metres, took pictures of the $1,500 a night palatial residences over the water. It was an incredible experience.
Well, that sounds like very helpful site to have, because when you're travelling on your own, you always need to find out whatever you need to find out about the country that you're intending to go to. So how else do you keep in touch with the rest of the world?
Well, we're talking on Skype. That's how I would keep in touch with friends.
Yeah.
Skype is basically it. Email, Skype. There's Viber, there's a couple of other apps that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
But that's basically it. That's the only communication I have.
Okay. So do you travel alone, and are you meeting up with people along the way? Or?
Yes, I'm crazy because I plan a year ahead, particularly with these crazy cheap air flights. So they're so cheap that you could just about forget about some of them. So it's very hard to say to someone, oh, in 6 months' time I'm going here. do you want to come? People can't think a day ahead, let alone a year ahead. But in practice, what I often do is meet some Australian friends in different countries, sometimes by accident. Sometimes they just happen to be going there, so we let each other know and we meet up. The advantage of travelling alone is that you will come across a large number of people, and you've got a choice whether you want to spend an hour with them, a day with them, a month with them. It's totally up to you. Whereas if you leave home with someone in your arm, there's a lot of people you won't get the chance to talk to just by the fact that you're with someone else.
Yeah.
You're much more approachable on your own. So truly, in a year's travel, you have trouble remembering any really sad and sorry days. They just sort of don't come up.
Oh, okay. Sounds amazing what you're doing. So do you travel light? I mean, what weight do you carry? Are you backpacking, taking suitcases? How do you...
Most of my travels have been with a medium-sized backpack that you'd have to check in on the airline. And I've always admired people who could travel light. I met this guy that... he had this backpack. It must have been like, I don't know, 5 kilograms or less, and he showed me what was in it, and I couldn't believe how minimal it was. And his logic was, well, if someone says go here, go there, he just goes. He doesn't have to go back and grab his stuff from the hotel. It's always with him. In the last 2-3 years, I've been so attracted to these low-cost airlines. A low-cost ticket for me in Southeast Asia would be somewhere in the region of $15 to $50 typically per flight. And that's if you don't have luggage to check in. So if you want to check in 15 or 20 kilograms of luggage, you've got another $15, $20 on top of that, which destroys your very nice little cheap airfare. So what I do now in the last couple of years is carry-on only. That typically means about 7 kilograms plus your laptop, and your camera is not counted in that 7 kilograms.
All right. 7 kilograms. That's a challenge.
I'm always overweight, but usually you get away with it. That's the typical story.
Okay. They're a bit tougher in Australia on being overweight, but maybe the Asians are more accommodating.
Yes, they are. They're more flexible, but you need to have a strategy. You'll have core things in your backpack that are valuable to you. And you could have a plastic carry bag in addition that I always get away with. Now, you might just have food in that, but you could also put slightly bulkier items that you could literally throw away. If they pulled you up and say it's going to cost you X dollars a kilogram, you take the laptop out, take the camera out, and that gets the weight down by, say, 3 kilograms. And then you get pretty close to your real weight, and normally it'll just say, you know, goodbye.
Okay. So if you're travelling all the time, I suppose you don't have room to buy any souvenirs. So how do you record what you've been doing?
Yeah, I do keep it. You mean a diary?
Yes, whatever diary. Are you?
Yeah,
I believe you're a photographer as well.
Yeah, so I have a diary because when you're travelling, you're doing so many things, you just can't remember it all when you get home, or particularly like a year down the track, or 10 years down the track, or 30 years down the track. So it's great to keep a diary. I think it's medicinal for your mind too. You just get it all out of your head. I do get a lot of requests for souvenirs, and I just told the story. You know, I'm already overloaded when I leave, so I can't bring back any serious souvenirs. But recently I brought back some little trinkets, and, you know, like, you know, 12 of these could fit inside the middle of your hand. So you can sort of carry little trinkets like that to give away, but serious things that people would really like as a present, no way. It's just not possible if you travel with carry-on only.
Can you tell us where you think the best place for shopping is in the world?
I would say it's Hong Kong. The reason I say Hong Kong is because you can shop at all levels. If you're a well-heeled lady and you want, for example, Donna Kay, and all the big names, you can go to the main island of Hong Kong, and the legitimate shops will have sales 1, 2, 3 times a year. If you're mid-range, you're also spoilt for choice. There's a lot of quality copies of anything you imagine, and that's probably the best choice in the world. And if you're really at the low end and you want a 50-cent T-shirt or something, you can go to the ladies' market in Hong Kong and fish around and get things that are just absolute bargains. If you're into electronics, like computers, Hong Kong gives you the best choice of any city in the world. I've actually flown to Hong Kong twice in my life to buy a laptop, once 4 years ago, once 10 years ago, and can save a large amount of money.
Really? Oh, well, that's good. That's good to know. So can you give us some tips for success in travelling?
I think the biggest tip would be to slow down. If you're staying a month in a place like I do, I'll give you an example of my favourite hotel I've been going to for 5 years. If you just walk into that reception and say, how much is a room? It'll be $30 a night. If you negotiate with the manager or the owner a favourable price per month, I've negotiated it down to $6.60 a night. That's a big difference.
Huge.
So if you're going to tear the world up by doing many cities in a given week, you've got a lot of travel expenses, you've never done this before, you're not going to know the cheapest way to do it, you're going to go to new restaurants all the time, you're not going to know where the locals eat, where it's good and cheap and safe to eat, you're going to hotels for the first time, you've got no idea what a good deal is in that city. So you're going to get ripped off in all ways. So slowing down, absorbing a local culture is the smartest thing you can do. I mean, if you've got a limited time, you're in business, and okay, you have to tear the world apart in X number of weeks or months, so be it. But if you have a choice and if you have limited money, slowing down is the secret.
Right, okay. So are there many of yous out there travelling like this that you've come across?
Yes. Earlier as a backpacker, a true backpacker, like just moving around quickly, there's a lot of male and female backpackers. I've been travelling for 35-odd years, and I'm pleased to say that you still see women travelling around as you did then. And backpackers have changed, actually. There's a relatively new term called a flashpacker, and I laugh at this. It's really a backpacker who's a bit more well-heeled and spends a bit more money. Mm. So, for example, let's say I spend $20 a day. A flashpacker might spend $40 or $50 a day, and that person would definitely have aircon in his room. They'd have Wi-Fi, hot water to shower. They might take taxis around town. They would eat Western food if they wanted to, and they'd live like a king or a queen. So a flashpacker is an interesting concept. You don't have to suffer budget travelling. The beautiful thing about budget travel is that you can choose your level of accommodation. It could be as low as $1 a night in a dormitory in Cambodia, or it could be a five-star hotel. It's totally up to you. It just depends on your budget. Same goes for food. You could eat street food. You can eat in restaurants to any monetary amount that you want to spend. And the same goes for, what have I talked about, accommodation, food. Oh, well, of course, the transport between cities. You could take a hard-nosed overnight bus to save money, or you could take a nice aircon day bus, or you could fly, or you might take a ship. There's just so many choices. So the beautiful thing about travel is it's truly up to you how you want to do it.
Mm. So you obviously enjoy what you're doing. Do you get to go home very often?
I go home for about 1 month every 2 years to Melbourne, and I just make sure the house is okay, do repairs, whatever.
Sounds like you've got it all worked out. So what's the most satisfying part of your budget travelling?
I think that I've done it, I can do it, and I'm really happy doing it. I don't need $1 million to do what I do, so I consider myself to be time rich, and if I was going for that 1 mil or 1 billion, I would have sold my soul to the devil. I would not have any time to myself, and I wouldn't have time to travel, that's for sure. So if you can set yourself up as a young person or a retiree where you're time rich, you really don't need a lot of money to travel.
That's very reassuring to know that. But what have you experienced with the people you meet when you are travelling? Do you keep in touch? Or?
Yeah, I've had the first time I went to Yongshu, which is a favourite place I did mention. It's a beautiful town surrounded by limestone pinnacles like mountains. The first time I went there was my first Asian trip in 1994.
Is this
it? And I befriended in China, yes.
Yes, China.
Southeastern China, about an hour's flight from Hong Kong, to give you an idea. It was the first time there, and I made a lot of local friends, and quite a few of those local friends, I've been to China about 10 times since 1994, and they're still my best friends. And of course, so each time I go, I make new friends, I catch up with the old friends, and it's just wonderful.
Okay. You see, you've got friends all around the world.
So true, yes.
How has your life changed since you retired, you as a person?
I'm very emotionally stable, but I can definitely say that it's a lot more relaxing doing what you want to do. I'm a thinker, I plan ahead, and I enjoy finding those cheap airfares we talked about before. It's a lot of pain for most people, but I'm happy because, I mean, I'll give you an example, which it probably took me 30 minutes to find it, but a local airline sent me a sale alert. I looked at what was available, and because I look regularly, I know if a deal is good or not. And this particular deal for $5 Australian is a flight in the Philippines. It's from Manila to Davao. What that means, it's a bit like Melbourne to Sydney. It's about 1,000 kilometres apart. And so this airfare I'll be flying in 6 months' time for $5 Australian, including all taxes.
Huh.
I'm just very happy that I found that airfare. I can almost be overjoyed by it, but, I mean, it's very commonplace for me to do that.
Oh. So what's your greatest passion in life?
I think to keep doing what I'm doing. It's just, you know, pinch yourself. Is this really how it is? And the reality is, I tend to have a bit of a business mind, and I ask myself at the end of every 12 months, what do I really want to do in the next 12 months? And basically I keep telling myself I just want to do the same.
It's amazing that you seem to be have got this wanderlust or something they call
wanderlust,
it.
Wanderlust, yeah. Just a hobo on the road, yeah.
So what else do you do?
Besides basically travelling, I spend too much time online. I have a lot of broad interests, so, you know, I'm interested in reading about people like Elon Musk that builds the electric cars and sends rockets into space. How can he do this? So I listen to podcasts. I study a lot online. I'm always trying to learn something. And also I take a lot of photos. So when you take photos, you typically load them into your laptop and you adjust them, you categorise them, label them. It takes time. So most of my time is taken up with just online and photos. That's what I basically do. And, of course, strolling around taking photos, I guess.
It sounds like an ideal retirement. How long do you think you're going to keep doing this for?
Well, I have a lot of Australian friends my age, and they always ask me, have you got insurance? You know, and obviously as we all get older, I guess you have to consider, if you wanted unlimited insurance, by the way, like not for things being stolen, which is not really an issue, but to be expatriated back to Australia, insurance for 1 year would be somewhere in the region of $600 to $1,000 a year. So that would be like a sixth or a seventh of my budget. So far I haven't had it, but maybe in the future as I get older, it might be smart to have it.
I see. Okay, well that will be, yes, your safety net then, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, local hospitals in some parts of the world are not good at best. Others can have top-rate staff, but you don't always get the best outcome. So it's a bit of a crapshoot overseas generally in the cheaper, poorer countries. Some hospitals have great reputations, but once again, there's no guarantee, like there would be in Australia, that you'd have a good outcome. So if something's serious, it's best to be flown back to your own country. Mm. If you didn't have insurance, that could cost you $40,000 Australian.
It's always a consideration.
Mm.
Anyway, well, we've been chatting away for some time now, and it's been really interesting to talk to you and to get your insights on travel and the best places in the world to go to. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I know my listeners will want to know more about you. Is there a way that they can talk to you or follow your travels? Is this through your that website you were talking about?
Exactly. TravBuddy.com/Shane is my first name. So that's how you can find me on the website.
Okay. And where are you off to next?
Next I go to a new place in the Philippines. It's called Porta Princesa. Never been there. It's on an island called Palawan. Bill Gates recently spent 12 days there with his family, so there must be something to it.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.